Good evening. So from the very beginning of, I guess 2 months ago when I first announced this series, it is tonight's topic that really piqued most people's interest, wondering what I meant by how to daven without kavana. I've heard lots of different comments and jokes, and I've appreciated 98% of them. The 2% know who you are. But the best comment that I heard, someone said, you don't need to teach us, or me, he said, you don't need to teach me how to daven without kavana. I'm an expert on how to daven without kavana. I'll be telling everyone how to daven without kavana. And it's true. If what I meant by how to daven without kavana means how to have a miserable davening and be totally unfocused and distracted, if that's what I meant, then it would just be the opposite of last time's shiur. Every suggestion we made last time, this would just be the opposite. To daven in a noisy place. Become a gabbai, right? Or a rabbi, right? To daven in a noisy place, to make sure not to take time to stop before davening, to not gather your thoughts beforehand, to not let your body be a source of reminder, as we talked about the Magas Mashal, the person banging on the pot but doesn't know why they're banging on the pot. It's not going to call any alarms, it's not going to accomplish anything. So we are bowing, we are striking our chest, we're bending our knees, we're doing all these things with our body, but if we're not paying attention, if we're not having kavana, then it's not really going to help us. So that's not what I mean. I don't mean, how do we accomplish the goal of being as distracted and as disconnected as possible? What I do mean is, how can we daven even when we don't have kavana? We talked last time about striving for the best, and we need to always strive for the best, but how to have kavana. But the topic for tonight is going to be, what do we do when we don't have kavana? Is davening a waste? Is davening still worthwhile? Should we still be davening when we don't have kavana? And that's going to be what we're going to dive into for this evening. I'm going to pull up my sources. We have them in person. And we can see this on Zoom. Excellent. So in order for us to tackle the question of davening without kavana, we need to first establish that this is not something new. I gave you a part of this Talmud Yerushalmi last time, but let's look at the Talmud Yerushalmi together, and maybe we'll feel a little bit better about ourselves. Talmud Yerushalmi describes how difficult it is to have kavana, and the Gemara goes to great Amorayim from Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, and what they said about their own tefillah and their own problems with having kavana. And source number one, Amar Rabbi Chiya Ruba, Rabbi Chiya the Great, he was obviously a very special person. He said, Ana min yomi lo kavanis ela chadzman. I never had kavana ever, except for this one time, by Michavna. I've really said to myself, okay, this time I'm really going to focus on my Shmona Esrei. But in the end, I started thinking in my heart, the Amar is man alil kumi malka. Kadme Arkevta or Resh Galusa. When the king is going in and he has two of his officers who are coming in to hold the door for him, who gets to go first? This guy or this guy? And that's what his mind is wandering. Instead of, this was the one time he ever really thought he was going to be on his path to having kavana, and his mind was focused on work, on politics, and some silly conversation. The Gemara says, Shmuel Amar Ana Manis Efrochia. Shmuel says, I end up counting chickens while I'm davening. I guess before they hatch. He's counting his chickens before they hatch. His mind is in his field, in his coop. Rabbi Bun Bar Chiya Amar Ana Manis Dimusia. I'm counting rows of bricks. He was in the shul, and he's like, look at the pattern on the wall, the stained glass, and then the pattern on the carpet. We always do that, right? You look at the carpet, and you see the different, how many orange squares are there, and that one doesn't look symmetrical. He is counting rows of bricks while he's davening. And we quoted this last week, Amar Rabbi Mitanya, Ana Mechazik Tivu L'Roshi. I really got to hand it to my head. I really got to give credit to my head. Dekad Hava Mati Modim, when Modim comes along, and I don't know where I am, who kara mi garme? My head bows on its own, which we said last week may not have been only a sarcastic comment, may have actually been an appreciation for the ways in which our bodies are able to wake us up. Now, if we're going to talk about not having kavana, the Gemara Maseches Erevin has a startling comment. The Gemara says in source number two, Amar Rav Sheshes Mishim Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Yechol ani lefdor es kol ha'olam kulam min hadin. Rav Sheshes said that I have the ability to exempt the entire Jewish world, or the entire world entirely, from being judged. I can exempt them from being punished. In all the years post-Churban, people are doing nothing wrong. The Pasuk describes us as not being drunk from wine, but we're all drunk, we're all out of our minds, we're all not able to think clearly. And the Gemara says, really? You think that nowadays, post-Churban, no one has any responsibility or culpability for anything that they do? They make a sale, it's not binding. They eat a cheeseburger, it's not binding. So the Gemara says, no, Maya Chalni Liftor Deka Amar Nami Midin Tfila. I meant, we can't blame someone for not having Kavana, because nowadays, post-Churban, post-miracles, post-Nevuah, post-Beis HaMikdash, post-Karbanos, we're not really expected, Rosh Hashanah says, in the name of his teacher, we're not really expected to have kavanah anymore. And it's understandable why a person would not be able to focus. And a person is no longer held responsible, post-Churban, says the Gemara, for not having kavanah when we daven. And for this reason, even halachos that really require kavanah, what's called kavanah is ma'akiv. Kavanah actually prevents a person from fulfilling the mitzvah. We mentioned last week that a person has to have kavanah during the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. That a person has to have a general sense that they're standing with Hashem for the entirety of Shmona Esrei, but a person has to have in mind the words, the meaning of the words for the first bracha. And the basic halacha is, quoted in source number 3 in the Shulchan Aruch, that for the first bracha, if you don't have in mind the words, you have to repeat that bracha. You have to go back and repeat Shmona Esrei. And the Rama says in source number 3, V'ha'idna, nowadays, ein chozrim b'shvil chisaron kavana. We don't really nowadays have to go back. We should not go back, because we didn't focus the first time. We're going to end up davening again without kavana. Imke lama yachzor. So why should we do this? So even halachos that mandate kavana take into account this sense of nowadays it's different because we can't focus.
But we have halacha that certain circumstances Torah is patur because he has no kavana.
Okay, the question was about a person who's Torah from traveling and certain details. Good. We're going to get to the case of a chassan who's distracted. That's going to be at the end of this year. But we'll get to that. Right? So the Rama is telling us that even though halacha requires kavana for certain things, what he calls nowadays, and he's quoting from the Tur, who lived in the 13, 1400s, so we're talking about for a while now, the Gemara said post-Churban, even in the days of the Gemara, maybe part of the Mishnah period. Very interesting idea. That kavana, even when it's ma'aki, when kavana is required, maybe nowadays it doesn't apply nowadays. So maybe we should say that, why bother? Let's just daven without kavana. We're not held accountable anymore. And why bother? Rav Avadia Yosef in source number 4 actually quotes from someone who used to say that. Yeah, publicly he would say, don't bother having kavana nowadays. Don't bother trying to have kavana nowadays. Source number 4. Shema shemati shetamad achad hirshel atzma lifsok barabim. Rav Avadia very angrily says, I heard a teaching of a Talmud Chacham who somehow gave himself the right to publicly teach the Bizmana Zeh Afakhila Ain Kol Khivla Spal Bakavana. Don't bother. There's not even an ideal to strive for Kavana, this person argued. Umitchus Kavana, he achlachasidim asridim asher Hashem Korei. Special people who don't live in this world, maybe they can have Kavana. But he's not just saying everyone else doesn't have to. He's saying, don't bother trying. The Samach Smichan, our Gemara, Meseches Erevin, the Talmud Chacham understood our Gemara in source number 2 as telling people, don't bother, don't waste your time trying to have Kavana. Valadi was very upset about this, and he writes where it's bolded, Udvarav mehevel yamatu. This is absolute garbage, he says. No way. Kikol gedoli aposkim kasfu din Kavana afiz manazeh. A lot of Sfarim, like the Shulchan Aruch, talk about Kavana as manazeh. We adjust for certain halachas. Why bother going back if you already said certain words and Shem Hashem? It won't help to go back. Yes, we do change a little bit to understand that we're not having Kavana nowadays, but to totally give up? It can't be. On the second to last line, Shekol Adam Tzarech Lidchok Atzmon Lechavein, the Rishonim write that a person needs to try. Push yourself the best that you can. Bim Eino Osakein, a person who doesn't daven at all, or in this case, doesn't even bother trying to have Kavana, Aveira hi biyado umutav lo shlo hispalel. That person isn't even trying. He takes the other extreme. One extreme is to say, don't feel bad, and don't bother trying, you're not going to do it. Kavana is impossible, so give up. The other approach is, what are you talking about? Of course, just do the best that you can. That's going to be our first group of suggestions for tonight in the next section. It's going to be about this balance. I mention dialectics all the time. Dialectics is about balancing two things that are both true, and we need to find some kind of middle path over here. One side of the dialectic is, it's really hard. We all can state from personal experience. We always daven without kavanah. It's very, very hard. And at the same time, we're going to make sure to hold ourselves to the best that we can. We're going to be understanding with ourselves and patient with ourselves because we know how hard it is, and we're going to take validation from the fact that it was even hard for our great Tanaim and Amoraim, and certainly for us. And, not a but, and, they're both true, and we're going to push ourselves the best that we can in whatever limited way that we can. Let's not let this be an all or nothing. Oh, can't have Kavana. Oh, the Gemara said, oh, I'm out. Udvarav mehevel yamatu. That's worse than garbage, he says. No, we need to try. Push ourselves, but to be patient with ourselves if we're not able to focus entirely. So what are going to be our suggestions for tonight? How are we going to daven when we don't have kavana? How do we daven without kavana? And the first section takes that approach to understanding, can we still win small battles? Can we lose the overall war? Or maybe not even look at it as losing the war. Can we not hold ourselves to a disappointing standard of, well, I was faced out on this word, I'm done. We're not going to take that approach. The Shulchan Aruch in source number 5 has a very startling statement where he writes that a person should not daven in a place that's distracting and not daven at a time that's very distracting. And the Shulchan Aruch in source number 5 concludes, V'achshav einan in this harem b'chol zeh. Nowadays, it doesn't really matter where or when you daven. Epnesha ein anu mechadnum kol kach b'tfila. We're not focusing anyway, so why bother striving to daven at a quiet time or in a quiet place? And the Mishnah Berurah is very upset with this. He doesn't agree, and most poskim don't agree with that. In source number 6, V'prima gadim kasa b'shem halavush, afal gav she'ein anu mechavnim, mikol makom ma'ade efshir lasos osin. What do you mean? We're going to strive for our best. We're going to do whatever we can. We're not going to give up and say, well, I'll daven in a noisy place. I'll daven on the subway when I have other options. Because, well, we're not really so focused anyway. No, we're going to say we're going to try to the best of our abilities. Alkein ein lesbal b'bayis sheyesham sheichar chadash or meitvash, a certain smell that's very distracting, and certainly a bad smell, he says. No, we are going to strive, which we mentioned last time, whatever time we could take to focus our head, whatever time we can take to gather our thoughts, whatever time we could take to take a deep breath, whatever time we can take to find a quiet place. All that goes a long way. So still striving to find a quiet time, to find a quiet place. Next, the tour, which I mentioned with Rama quoted earlier, the tour says that we're not going to repeat Shmona Esrei for lack of kavana because what will really help? The tour gives our first practical suggestion for tonight, where it's underlined in source number 7. The idea of not having this all-or-nothing approach allows us to say, Kasav harav Rabbi Eliezer, sheyargil adam atzmo sheyachavin lefachot v'chatima shel kol bracha. A person should at least have kavana for part of the bracha, maybe at the end. It's very distracting. There's a lot of brachos going on. Bracha after bracha, we say it 3 times a day. It's by rote. It's not so interesting. Maybe we're not really paying attention to how interesting it really is. But at least for the end of the bracha, snap back in. And you could switch it up. For today, I'm focusing on Atah. Every time I get to an Atah, I'm just looking out for them. Every Atah is a reminder that I'm davening in second person. I'm speaking to someone, and it's just a reminder that I'm standing in front of Hashem. That's it. But there's 95% of the words are not having... Good. I'll grab what I can. At least for the word Atah, that's today's Avodah. And then another day, we don't want to get monotonous. Okay, so this day I'm going to daven whenever I say Hashem's name. Remember, I'm talking to Hashem as the Adon. Adon, master of the world, created everything. Ooh. Or just the last couple words of the bracha. Refuah, bracha, Yerushalayim, just the end, the last word of the bracha. I'll snap back in, I'll pay back attention just for the couple words at the end. A lot of the Arch Kol Siddurim, I think most of them, have a little bit of like a introduction. There's like a one word, like das, or like refuah. They have like a one word summary. Just pay attention to one part. Pick one word. Pick one syllable, pick one letter, whatever it is, if it's part of the bracha, not to have this all or nothing thing. We're not having kavana, so don't fight with yourself. You're not having kavana. But pick this day, this time, this tefillah, I'm going to have in mind, look out for this word, look out for this shoresh, and even just a couple of words. At the end of the bracha, throughout the bracha, that's our first idea. Now let's say we get to the end of davening, or toward the middle of davening, and we just realize, well, I don't know where I've been. We mentioned the story last time, but the person who's davening in the office gets punched in the chest, and they realize they're at Slach Lanu. That's what we talked about last time, using your body as built-in reminders, the bowings, the shakings, the standings, the eyes. We have so many tools in our arsenal to snap us back into reality, and we feel bad. Oh no, I've been zoning out. I've been going on autopilot for the last 14, 15, 16 brachos. Is there any point to davening with Kavana for the rest? And the Chafetz Chaim discusses this in source number 8 in his introduction to Shmiras HaLashon. And he writes, "B'shamati b'shem gaon echad sheshal adam oso." He was asked, "Im lo kivein berova tefila, who omer b'sofa tefila, be'eza ofen ye'orer es nafsho lehaschil lechavin." The person realizes they're 15 brachos in, they weren't paying attention, they got to modim, they got to sim shalom even, and they realize, oops, I wasn't paying attention. How can they give themselves the encouragement to finish the davening as best as they can? And the Chafetz Chaim gives a mashal. I'll read it to you outside. He gives a mashal of a person, of a young girl who's in the marketplace, taking times into account, and this girl, she's selling Girl Scout cookies, or she's selling cucumbers, or whatever she, Girl Scout cucumbers, right? And people are coming, and they're buying from her. She wants to save up for a very, very nice bike. And this thug comes over and starts grabbing all the cookies. And she stands there, totally overwhelmed, totally confused. The person's just stealing all the cookies. one by one. She has a lot of cookies there, and he's piling it into his bag and piling it into his mouth, and she just stands there without really knowing what to do. And a person on the other side of the street calls out to her, okay, you grab some too. Okay, you can't stop this guy. He's much bigger and stronger than you. But just because he's grabbing doesn't mean you have to let him take everything. Whatever you're able to grab, you grab too. That's the Chafetz Chaim's mashal, and he quotes from someone else. That is the mashal he gives. The Yetzirah very often is bigger and stronger than us. To fight with ourselves, to push back, seems like an impossible battle. We're like a little girl against this big thug who's taking all of our cookies. So what? We get woken up by the person screaming at us, grab whatever you can. So there's one bracha left, two brachas left. So grab those brachas. So he grabs 17 of them. You're going to let him grab all of them because of that? But he writes at the end, where it's underlined, Kina davar mamish b'inyan tefila, Hine hayetzer miskaber ala adam umapil alav atzlus machshavo zaros. The Yetzirah is so big and powerful and makes us spacing out and lazy and far, and all kinds of crazy thoughts. Achal yedezel lo kivein v'kama v'kama brachos me'at tefila. You weren't paying attention for 10, 11, 15, 16 brachos. Gama ta chatof. You too, grab. The zaris is atzmecha. Wake yourself up, inspire yourself. B'kol kochacha. Whatever's left to grab, grab it. Don't give up on it. Whatever's left. I've heard Rabbi Yisrael Reisman, who gave a nice suggestion about kavana and benching. He said there's like little sets to pay attention to. He says, if you notice in the second bracha of benching, in Noda Lecha, there's a lot of als. Al Shonchatel Avoseinu, he gave us Eretz Yisrael. Al Shotesanu Mitzrayim, he took us out of Egypt. Al Brischa, Chukecha, Mazon. He says, try to count on your fingers, when you get to the Al's. There are seven Al's. And whenever you remember, count how many Al's you get. Sometimes he wakes up in the middle, and he counts the last two. Sometimes he's a little bit earlier, he counts four. Occasionally he gets seven, but very often not. But there's such a beautiful mindset of not all or nothing, whatever you can get. So today I got two, today I got four, today I got six, today I got seven, today I got eight. There's not even eight. What was I saying? What happened over here? I don't know. I got confused. Fine. But a person who's trying to tap into whatever they can grab, who's paying attention to a word here, a word there, a bracha here, a bracha there, that person is davening without kavana, and at the same time, they're still looking for little ways to grab. Someone told me that they saw on Amazon, a person had mistakenly posted the wrong price for the iPads. Instead of being $1,000, they were like $10. So Dan's deals went out, everyone was grabbing all them. I imagine for the person selling it was probably very overwhelming to watch all these iPads going down. It's probably not right. I think it's a chilul Hashem. But okay, another topic for another time. But they're all going so fast. So what if the seller says, well, they're going so fast, might as well just give up. I'm so frustrated. That's a sunk cost. Just take down whatever's left. Why would you give up and throw up your hands because they're all going so fast? They're going so fast, but you grab whatever you can save, whatever you can grab, whatever you can still keep. If the physical reminders wake us up in the middle and we have a chance to daven a couple brachos left, so then don't give up. Don't let the Yetzirah bully you into being overwhelmed, too overwhelmed to even try. Whatever you can take left, whatever you have an opportunity, any word, any number of owls and benching or atas and shmona esrei, take them. Take them. Take as many as you can get. I've heard from Rabbi Menachem Penner, who has a beautiful series of series on tefillah. When he talked about this topic, he said, sometimes a good Shomea Tefillah can salvage a really bad Shmona Esrei. If we're talking about, you wake up in the middle and we're talking about before Shomea Tefillah, before Shema Koleinu is the end of the middle section, it's the end of the Bakashos section of Shmona Esrei, and it's the cultivating, it's the kind of a chameleon of all the Bakashos, which encompasses everything. And he quoted a very interesting comment by the Mabit. Mabit was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef in Tzfat in the 1500s, Moshe ben Yosef Trani. Mabit has a sefer on tefillah called Beis Elokim, 500 years ago. And he writes in source number 9, Va'afilu ha-mevinim, even people who are so tapped in to tefillah and the meanings, i'afshar shiyuchlu l'chavim b'chol eis shemispalim. It's not realistic to expect that we're going to always have all the kavana all the time. V'lachain, says the Mabit, anu omrim b'sof ha-brachos ha-emtzayos, in the middle section we end off our bakashos with Shema koleinu Hashem Elokeinu. What are we saying? Listen to this beautiful pshat. Ki gam shelo chivanu. Karoi b'tfila seinu. We are acknowledging. We weren't really paying attention for all these bakashos. We need refuah. We didn't really have in mind for refuah. We need parnasa. We weren't davening during Baruch Aleinu. We need Yerushalayim. We weren't thinking about Yerushalayim or Mashiach in Es Tzemach David. So now we ask Hashem, gam ki hakol hu b'li kavana. Even just this empty voice. Shema Koleinu, we're saying it in almost like a disparaging way. Hashem, listen to our call, our noise. are empty noise, are mindless tefillah. Uvechasina anu omrim ki ata shomea tefilas kol peh. You, Hashem, listen even to just the lip service. Afilu hatfila shehi min hasafa v'lechutz. Even the empty tefillah, the heartless tefillah, the mindless tefillah, she'ena b'kavana, ata shomea osa al yedei rachamecha harabim. That's how the bracha concludes. Kevan she'enem yodim l'chavim ba, where, as Gemara said, we're honest, we have no choice. But not no choice but to give up. But no choice than to say, at least during Shema Koleinu, I wasn't paying attention until now, but we ask Hashem to accept something, to give us the strength to elevate it now, at this point. That was Rabbi Penner's idea. Sometimes a good Shema Koleinu can elevate and salvage a really rotten Shmona Esrei. We feel like we weren't paying attention at all. But this is the idea. Mabit is saying 500 years ago that Shema Tefillah was designed with the average person in mind, designed for people who aren't really having Kavanah. They wake up all of a sudden and it's, did I really get here? How did I get here? At the end of the middle section of Shmona Esrei. And we say, Hashem, please accept whatever I've said and allow me to elevate it as well. Beautiful, right? And that is an opportunity during Shema Koleinu to actually list some of the things. I forgot to ask for Parnasa. I forgot to mention that there's a health concern going on. Good. That is the moment to elevate it. Whatever wasn't mentioned before, it's almost like an interesting thing, right? Because you have very specific brachos, and then one chameleon, one size fits all. What's that doing there? You would think each bracha has its own thing. So what else is Shema Koleinu not encompassing? So you could say maybe something that wasn't included in Chazal's ideas. Or you could say, almost like another chance, knowing that we don't have kavana, or how hard it is to have kavana, at the end of that section, it's almost like built in, and if you weren't paying attention until now, we ask Hashem, give me another chance. There's a second chance built into Shmona Esrei. A powerful Shema Koleinu can actually salvage a mindless Shmona Esrei up until that point. But now we need to ask the question of, so what if we in fact daven an entire Shmona Esrei without Kavanah? This is great if you remember this word, a couple words here at the Chasima, or maybe we salvage a couple of brachos, or at Shema Koleinu we're able to salvage the middle section of Shmona Esrei, but what if we actually don't have Kavanah at all? And what if we look back and say, I haven't had in mind one bracha, or one Chasima, 3 times 7, it's been a lot of tefillahs where I haven't had any Kavanah at all. So what would you say about those tefillahs? Are those tefillahs a waste? We definitely want to remember not to be all or nothing. But what if we have a nothing? Is a nothing worthless? We've been discussing the aspect of tefillah in this series about tefillah as a relationship. Yosef Albo, Rav Hirsch, the idea of tefillah as a relationship, what kind of relationship is being deepened or formed if we're davening without kavanah? No kavanah for the words, no kavanah of Omed Lefnei HaMelech, I don't know who I'm talking to, where I'm standing. Is that tefillah worth anything at all? I gave you in source number 10, one of the halachic sources, the Shilas and Tshuvos Eretz Tzvi, not to be confused with Eretz HaTzvi, which is Rav Shechter, Shlita, but Eretz Tzvi, Aryeh Tzvi Frumer, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Lublin. He was killed in the Holocaust, Shem Yikom Damo. He has beautiful, very, very lamdish Tshuvos, and he writes about this idea of tefillah that has no kavanah at all, and he says, no, it is still a tefillah. It still counts. Even without any kavanah at all, the tefillah still has meaning. What is that meaning? Why would a tefillah have meaning if there's no kavanah behind it whatsoever? So I gave you the Meshech Chachma in source number 11, and we're going to deviate from his exact words, but just to explain a beautiful Targum Onkelos at the end of Sefer Bereishis. Yaakov Avinu is giving his big speech to Yosef, and he tells Yosef that he's giving Yosef the city of Shechem, and Yaakov says that he conquered Shechem becharbi uvekashti. He's telling Yosef, on a simple level, that he conquered the city of Shechem with his cherev, with his sword, and Keshis with his bow. You don't really find earlier in Tanakh Yaakov Avinu walking around wielding all kinds of weapons. And Onkelos there explains that charbi and kashti are actually two different types of tefillah. Bitzlosi uviva usi. You might recognize these words from Kaddish. These are two different Aramaic terms for tefillah. So what was Yaakov saying? I conquered Shechem with my tefillah and my tefillah. Wait, what? Tefillah and tefillah. What's tefillah and tefillah? And why are tefillahs compared to a sword and compared to a bow? And the Meshech Chachma and others give this idea that a bow and a sword damage in very different ways. He writes, "V'hinei cherev hu ba'atzmo mazik." A cherev is inherently a sharp object. Shebarzel sheyesh lo chidud meimis b'chol shehu. It's inherently a sharp object, even unintentionally. It just pokes and automatically creates results. Pain sarach oma doesn't require a real thrust. It'll be stronger if you thrust, but the blade is so sharp it accomplishes on its own. Aval hakeshes, from the word bakasha, the bow, ba'atzmo eino mazik. The bow by itself, the arrow by itself, doesn't necessarily create damage. Rak koach hamora. It's about the archer and how much effort they pull back. B'talu lefi koach v'richuk hamora b'keshes. You can take an arrow and poke someone, but that's really functioning as a sword in that case. The whole thrust, the whole value, the whole skill of an arrow is that it's fired based on how much effort you pull back on. And Meshav Hakma himself talks about different types of tefillah, voluntary tefillahs versus formalized tefillahs. But another way to say it is, there's really two different aspects of tefillah. There's the tefillah of the bow. The tefillah we pull back, we pull the heartstrings, we put so much kavana into it. The more you invest, the more you pull, the more you're pulling out the heartstrings, the more you're making a relationship, the more you're humbling yourself, the more you're investing yourself in Hashem, the stronger, the farther, the more powerful it is. But Yaakov says it's another kind of tefillah as well. There's a tefillah and there's a tefillah. There's a cherev and there's a keshes. And that keshes is very important. When we're feeling it, when we're inspired, and we're tugging at the heartstrings. But tefillah is also a cherev. Tefillah is an inherently sharp object. Tefillah is almost like this code, where you type in these words and something happens. I don't care if the code is put in mindlessly. I don't care if the sword was handled absentmindedly. The sword is inherently dangerous. The sword is inherently potent. It itself wields tremendous koach. And tefillah has that aspect as well. Not only because we pull and we connect and we're invested and we're tugging on Hashem's heartstrings and our heartstrings and changing ourselves. Yes. Tefillah, even without any kavanah at all, these are special words composed by Chazal in their infinite wisdom that are actually typing in a code, that are actually handling a sharp object that allows us to change things in the upper worlds, even if we don't really know what we're saying. And even if we don't know where we are or who we're talking to. There's something inherently powerful and potent about tefillah. There's a tefillah of the sword, and there's a tefillah of the bow. My Rabbi, Rabbi Yosef Nisbacher in Shalavim, used to say that in Yiddishkeit, there are Ahava days and there are Yira days. There are days, and this is true for all mitzvahs, for tzedakah and for davening and for learning, and there are days where we're so excited. We're inspired, we're moved, we're running to yeshiva, we're running to learn, we're running to give tzedakah. And there are days where we don't feel it at all. But we do it because we have to. We do it because of Yira, which says, even when I don't feel like it, there's something meaningful about this, even when I'm not excited about it. And tefillah really works in that way. And maybe we've had a lot of Yira days, but on those days, if not going to have kavana, how to daven without kavana? Make sure to say every word. Because at least in the sense of a code, in the sense of an inherently powerful object, you're still typing it in. You're still accessing something special. Rabbi Penner, when he discussed this, he said maybe these two ideas of cherev and keshes are also similar to what Chazal say in source number 12, that there are two paradigms for tefillah. The Gemara comments that tefillos avos tiknum and tefillos kineged temidin tiknum. There's a paradigm of the avos daven tefillah, Avram Shacharis, Yitzchak Milcha, Yaakov Mariv, but also that the carbon tamid in the morning, that Shacharis, carbon tamid in the afternoon, that's Milcha, the leftovers, the Evarim Upadarim, burning the fats in the limbs, that's Mariv. And the Gemara supports both of those ideas. Whereas a Tanik Kavaseh the one and Tanik Kavaseh the other one. Tefillah really is patterned after both the avos and the karbanos. My Penner suggested that they're both true. Some days we're like the avos. We're volunteering, we're inspired, we're starting a new religion. Hopefully not, but we're so inspired and we're so moved and we're so driven and we're so passionate and we're pioneers and we're out there and we're... And some days, it's an avoda. It's really hard. It's a sacrifice to schlep to shul and say all the words. And if that's the case, we could say, even with tefillah in the relationship format, there's a value to this cherev. There's a value to this karbanos. Because a relationship demands that there are some times where I don't feel like doing the dishes. I don't feel like taking out the garbage. I'm not having an ahava moment where I'm so excited to help out my significant other. This is a hypothetical example, of course. But a person might say, I'm not interested today. But the yira says, you're committed in this relationship. And if the relationship matters to you, you're going to come even when you're not excited to do it. Because when it gets done, it's meaningful. The sink is clean. The garbage is out of the house. I did it begrudgingly. I wasn't thinking good thoughts. That's not great. That's not the best level. And that's something of value too.
Isn't there a value to showing up?
That's what we're saying. The value of showing up. I wake up early in the morning. I'm sacrificing sleep. I'm sacrificing the time. I'm sacrificing checking my messages. I'm sacrificing the time from work. And it's awkward and I have to miss a meeting. And yes, we're sacrificing. And that fuels a relationship. That allows us to connect with Hashem and say, I love you so much that even when I don't feel like I love you, I'm committed to speaking to you. And even when it doesn't feel like I'm speaking to you, and I haven't had kavanah in weeks, but I've been showing up, and I've been saying all the words, and I'm paying attention, at least to the fact that I'm showing up. And that matters in and of itself. So what do we have so far? We have this idea that tefillah, we can not call it an all or nothing. We have to remember it's not all or nothing. A word here, a word there, to go in with a certain word to look for. And the idea of remembering whatever you can, grab whatever you can, don't call it a sunk cost. And now we're saying that even when we can't have kavanah at all, just say, making sure to say the word. If it's a yira day, a day where it's a cherev day, it's a kod day, it's a day where it's a karbanos day, whatever that means, it means that I'm going to make sure to say every word and just acknowledge the fact that I'm investing. I gave you a quote from the Baal Shem Tov over here in source number 13, which inspired me to think about the value of tefillos without kavanah. I'll really read it together. It is said that the Baal Shem Tov used to say, if I pray 100 times without proper kavanah and focus and sincerity, and the next time with kavanah, that one time lifts up the other 100 times, because that one time creates the breakthrough and pulls the others through the opening with it. One must keep the channels open, and occasionally one will make a spiritual breakthrough. Furthermore, the 100 inadequate attempts were not wasted at all. Without them, the 100 first, might not have occurred at all. He's making 2 points over here. One point is, yeah, a lot of these tefillos we've been davening for a long time, 100, maybe 1,000 or 10,000 tefillos, but we're saying them. We're putting in the code, we're using the cherev, we're making sure that the tefillos are out there, and those tefillos might be weak, and they might be, if you can give a spiritual image, a physical illustration, maybe those tefillos are kind of bumping against the ceiling. They're kind of floating around without really real strength or real wings, kiviyachol. And that one good tefillah that we have, where we're actually focused on something, we have a shake-up in our lives, we use the message of the rocks being thrown down, and we wake up, and all of a sudden we have a great tefillah, that tefillah carries with it all those other 1,000 tefillahs, which we thought were nothing, which we got disparaged over, and we got despairing over, and we thought there's no big deal to those tefillahs. But that one good tefillah comes along, and boom! Now thousands of worth of tefillahs are coming through, all because of that one. And maybe it's because of that one that we can take consolation for every time we daven, and who knows what we're putting out there. It may not feel like it's meaningful, but on the heels, on the wings of one proper tefillah, that can elevate it all. I want to end off with something that I heard from Rabbi Penner when he talked about this topic that really changed the way I daven. In addition to everything we talked about so far, about making sure it's not all or nothing, picking something, waking up whenever you can, still putting in the time, sacrificing the effort, Rabbi Penner said that very often we're so distracted by whatever it is that's bothering us that we forget to actually ask Hashem's help with the thing that's distracting us. Bother fighting with ourselves and banging ourselves against the head, maybe we just gave up and stopped trying. Whatever it is that's important enough to occupy our thoughts and distract us from davening, do we ask Hashem for help with that somewhere in this tefillah? I have this test, I have this date, I have this meeting, I have this job interview, I have this surgery, I have this news, or something more trivial, thinking about the sports game. So daven to Hashem for the sports game. Whether you have money on the game or just your own entertainment or your own fandom, so daven to it. I don't want to bother Hashem with that. Well, you're already bothered by it. It's already ruining your Shmona Esrei. So it's already in your mind. Let's not pretend that because I can't talk about it with Hashem because that would be so trivial. I don't want to waste his time with small things. You're already wasting his time with small things because it's totally taking up your focus and you're not focusing anyway. Someone told me, I'm very much not trained in this, but someone said jujitsu, the main thrust of it is that you don't want to try to fight back against someone else's force. So to block someone else's force and take the brunt of it is very, very painful, and you have to be really strong or put up a tremendous amount of counterforce to push back against someone else's efforts. But if you can use someone else's force and go with the punch and spin them around and flip them over, use their momentum, as opposed to fighting back or pushing against that wall or needing an exorbitant amount of force of the Yetzirah is distracting me, I can't focus, I need to have super kavanah, take whatever it is that's pushing against you and run with it. Okay, I can't stop thinking about this sports game. I can't stop thinking about this job interview. I can't stop thinking about problems I'm having at home. I can't stop thinking about so take that problem and run with it. So use that. Channel that into your davening. At the very least, ask yourself at the end of tefillah, did I daven for that thing that was bothering me? Or in the middle, you wake up in the middle, grab whatever you can. No, I can't, I'm so distracted. So whatever it is that's distracting you, can you insert that? At least for the bracha of refuah. Have in mind that surgery, have in mind that news you're waiting for, or the person that you're worried about. At least in Chonin Hadas, have in mind to make intelligent decisions today, and to do well in the job interview, and to have good thoughts. At least during Baruch Aleinu, at least during that one bracha, have kavana for whatever work-related thing is stressing you out, or financial thing, or thing you have to sign, or insurance lapse you have to deal with, that's very stressful. So take that, and daven for that. The other 18 brachas could be wasteful. But at least the thing that's really pushing against your mind, the thing occupying all your thoughts and all your force, at least take that and spin it around and say, I'm going to at least daven for that. That'll be jujitsu with a J-E-W. Jujitsu, right? We're going to take that force and we're going to spin it around and we're going to use it and channel it toward the very thing that we're connecting with Hashem over. We'd mentioned in the past the idea of all these pebbles are hopefully not rocks, but things Hashem is throwing at us. The whole purpose is to wake us up, so use them. If it's a minor annoyance, a major annoyance, or a major bracha of money raining down, whatever it is that's distracting us, a happy thing, a funny thing, a silly thing, fine, daven for friends. Daven to have good relationships. Daven to have wonderful children. Whatever it is that's distracting you, think about it. And daven to Hashem for those things. This idea is expressed so beautifully in the Maharal, in source number 14, the idea of channeling our thoughts and feelings into tefillah. The fateful moment where Yaakov Avinu and Yosef finally reconnect, 22 painful years for Yaakov Avinu, he finally sees Yosef. Pasuk describes Yosef falls on his father's neck and he cries, and Yaakov does nothing, according to the text. And Rashi famously comments, what was Yaakov doing during that time? He was saying Shema. And everyone asked the question, well, was it Zman Kriya Shema or not Zman Kriya Shema? If it was really well into Zman Kriya Shema, Yaakov couldn't have davened Hashkama. This moment he's wasting his time saying Shema, and this was the first time, why wasn't Yosef saying Shema? They ask questions like that. Maral says it wasn't Zman Kriya Shema, or else Yosef would be saying Shema. But Yaakov took this emotional moment and he channeled it into Kriya Shema. Shekasher ba Yaakov v'ra'as Yosef b'no melech. When Yaakov sees Yosef in the chariot with the crown, ba belibo ahavaso v'yiraso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu eich midos av him tovos v'shlemos. Yaakov was filled with great love and awe of Hashem, of how Hashem works wonders. Umeshalim schar tov v'yireyav and rewards tzadikim v'zeo midas hachasidim. This is what great people do, says the Maharal. Asher yikro lahem tov misdabkim el HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When good things happen, they channel it back to Hashem. The Zel Kriya Shema. That's what Shema is. Shema is about attributing everything to Hashem, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yichud Hashem. Hashem is one, meaning that all things are attached to Hashem. Via Havda, or via Havta, loving Hashem. The Roy Hay Likros Kriya Shema Kasher Ba'i Lev Yosef Acher Hatzar Hagadol Asher Hayelo Bavuro. Yaakov struggled and agonized for decades over Yosef being missing. Viata, and now, Rao so melech. Yaakov said all this pain, it meant something. It was all for a reason. Yosef's still here. He's put in position to save the entire family, save all of Am Yisrael. Haya oi vesa kodesh barcho asher osa loze, vikibo malchuso viahavaso viyaraso, vizeo nechom mevin. Maral says, Yaakov Avinu wasn't saying the daily Shema in the sense that he was time for Shema. Yaakov said, I'm going to channel these thoughts and feelings. How distracted would we have been at this moment? A fateful reunion? I got to dive in shop. I'll dive in quickly so I can go back to hugging my son. Yaakov took the hug of his son and channeled that into tefillah. That became his Kriya Shema for the day. That's how he used the moment. The Stipler in source number 15 comments on this Maharal, to Neil's point earlier, that it's so ironic that the Gemara in Brachos at the end of the second Perek says that a chassan doesn't daven Kriya Shema on the day of his wedding because he's so preoccupied. A lot going on the day of his wedding, the night of his wedding, and he can't focus. How opposite is this? For the average person, we say, there's a lot going on, they can't say Kriya Shema. For Yaakov, it was, I have to say Kriya Shema. The average person could say, there's a wedding going on, a lot's happening at work, a lot's happening to my family, I'm too distracted to daven. A Yaakov Avinu would say, that's a lot to daven for. That's a lot to put into your tefillah. A job interview. An emotional reunion. That's reason to daven. And the other fateful tefillah, the other fateful Kriya Shema, Rabbi Akiva's Kriya Shema, in source number 16, where he was being martyred, and he said Shema, and his Talmidim said, Ad Kan? How can you say Shema right now? And he says, I've been waiting for this forever. Don't you understand? This is what Shema is all about. It's taking that pain. It's taking that joy. It's taking that momentous occasion. And instead of saying it's so meaningful, it's so powerful, it's so all-encompassing that I can't daven, it's so meaningful, it's so all-encompassing, I have to daven for that. Let me take the punch and roll with it. Let me take that energy and force and channel it and spin it and turn it into relating to Hashem. That's why he's giving me the money. That's why he's giving me the pebbles. For good or for bad or for worse, whatever it is, it's a message from Hashem. We're turning to him because he's getting our attention. So whatever it is that's occupying our attention, so bring that into davening. You know what? You're already bringing it into davening. It's occupying all of your thoughts. Can't stop thinking about it. At least for that one bracha about parnasa. At least for that one bracha about refuah. At least whatever it is, have that in mind. Or if you forget, Shomea Tefillah. You can salvage a batch of Esrei with a good Shomea Tefillah. The all-encompassing chameleon, whatever it is, wake up during Shomea Tefillah, using all of our body parts from the previous topic. Whatever we wake up, whatever, grab whatever you can, whatever word you can, and whatever it is you're thinking about during that atah. I'm already thinking about the sports game, thinking about work, thinking about family. Just put that into the atah. I'm talking to you, the one who gives that parnasa, who gives me that job, who gives me friends, who helps me resolve annoying insurance issues. Whatever it is, big or small, trivial or not, whatever it is, we're already thinking about it. So bring that lack of kavana into kavana. We're already thinking about it. Might as well go with it. And perhaps just one final step as we end off for tonight is, even if it's not the exact bracha, what if you remember this, you already passed Rifa'inu, and you think about something related to medical, related to feeling, not feeling so well. Can't focus on daven, my head is hurting. So daven for your head to stop hurting, at least daven for your head to stop hurting. Oh, but I'm past Rifa'inu. Okay, so put in another bracha. Sometimes it fits better, sometimes it fits worse. But that's an opportunity we have. I've had some creative ones over the years. A job interview, I've already passed Baruch Aleinu. Hashiva Shavteinu Kvar Yishona. Give me good judgment in my interview. Okay, it's a little clever. But okay, I'm fitting it in. Shalom Bayis. Mamata Ala Tzadikim. Okay, make me a tzaddik. Give me more patience. Make me a better person. If we're looking and davening for places to insert something, at the very least, we're paying attention. Looking, how can I fit this in? How can I fit in the job interview into Yerushalayim Yircha? Back Yerushalayim, by Stem of Yisrael, I should build a house for the Shechina. Okay, whatever it is, fit into wherever you're up to. Just pay attention. Let it occupy your thoughts now. Bring it to your attention now. These are our takeaways for tonight. Number one, to remember it's not all or nothing. Whatever we can grab, whatever we can take, the end of the bracha, this word this day, this word on a different day, Atah, Hashem, the title of the bracha. If we wake up in the middle, our body wakes us up, so then grab whatever brachos are left. And at least Shema Kaleinu, if you remember before that point, let Shema Kaleinu be a chance to whatever we forgot, elevate our kol, elevate our peh, whatever we were saying, lip service, make that meaningful. When we can't focus at all, there is a power to the sword, there is a power to the yira, power to the karbanos, the sacrifice. The relationship is furthered by the fact that I am making the time to come here every single day, that I am making the time to say all these words. And finally, this idea of when all else fails, at least the thing occupying your mind, whenever you realize, oh, I haven't spaced in a long time, just daven for that. Daven for that thing. If it's the right bracha, great. If it's not the right bracha, make it fit. Just stick it into the atah, stick it into the Hashem, be creative, make up with some wild ideas, some really interesting opportunities to connect ourselves to tefillah. So hopefully, if we keep this in mind, if we have the right kavana, or we don't, either way, to realize it's not all or nothing, and it's not one size fits all. There's a power to the tefillah, to the words, and there's a power to making our experiences real when we talk to Hashem every single day. Come on.